program manager.
Hi, I'm Eric Coates, the student music executive.
This is Costa, the news director.
Hey, it's John, the production coordinator.
Hey, this is Josh, I'm the digital submissions coordinator.
I'm Nellie, host of The Cat's Pajams.
This is Matt Granlund from Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show.
My name is Hugo, I'm the volunteer manager.
Hey, I'm Jane, I'm the volunteer coordinator.
Hey, it's Sarah Corden-Lee from the CITR Music Department.
This is Eleanor Waring, President of CITR Student Executive. From all of us at CITR, we would like to acknowledge and thank everyone who donated to this year's fund drive. With the help of listeners like you, we raised over $38,000. For this incredible generosity, we would like to say thank you.
Thanks, you. Thank you for donating to Fund Drive.
Thank you very much for your support. We love you guys. Take it easy.
Thank you so much for donating to Fund Drive.
Thank you. Your donation makes such a huge difference.
Thank you so much for all your donations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you all so much for your support.
Thank you very much to everybody that donated for Fund Drive.
Thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you for supporting this year's Fund Drive.
Thanks, guys, for volunteering and donating.
Thank you so much for donating to CITR's Fund Drive this year. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening. The time's now 8 p.m. Coming up right away is the White Noise Comedy Show. My name is Simon Welton, and I will be staying with you for after the White Noise Show, for the White Noise After Show, where I will be hosting it. And I'll be joined in the studio by one of our actors, Connor. So say hello, Connor. Connor's here right now.
Hey, guys. My first time on the radio. One of the actors, as Simon said.
And also joining us in the studio are going to be two very special guests. We've got Brad Dorian and Stephen McNeil, both comics on the local Vancouver scene. So we're talking to them. Lots of interesting stuff. And if you have any questions for them or for me or for Connor, please, please, please send in your questions at whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. But without further ado, here is the new episode of White Noise.
Good morning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, broadcasting from the vibrant city of Vancouver. Today's show is brought to you in part by Paula's Payday Loans. If you think you have no money now, wait till we're done with you. First up tonight is the conclusion to the sporting phenomenon that is Ultimate Leader, the only cage fighting competition featuring the cream of former world leaders. We rejoin the action at the semi-final stage.
Welcome one and all to Ultimate Leader. I'm Juan Choker, and joining me today in the commentary box is none other than Soviet superstar Joseph Stalin.
Thank you for that flattering introduction, Juan. It makes a humble man like me blush.
Oh, Joe, maybe you should explain yourself. People, I think, might not assume just how humble you are.
Well, yes, things always get so twisted in world politics. People might say, but you have so many pictures and statues made of yourself. But that was only because I'm a perfectionist, and they never got it quite right. I always end up looking like that fat cartoon plumber Mario.
Well, a lot of people don't know that the Americans forced the Nintendo to make a Mario look like a fat Stalin.
The bastards! And I wasn't even in charge anymore. It ruined Super Smash Brothers for me.
Speaking of a smash, who do you think will come out on top today? We have the semis and the finals today. The semis are between Attila the Hun and Franklin Dangerous Roosevelt. Then, Margaret the Iron Lady Thatcher takes on Paul the Punisher Potts.
Well, my money is on Attila the Hun to win the whole thing. The way he decapitated Churchill in the first round really sent a message to the others.
Let's not forget, Thatcher stopped the previously undefeated Cleopatra also in the first round.
Absolutely. There is no denying Thatcher is an absolute animal. There is a reason they call her the Iron Lady.
She used to be called the Brass Lady in her youth, you know.
I didn't. How come?
Well, because she was simply never seen without her favorite pair of brass knuckles.
Well, I think we can both agree we wouldn't want to meet any of these guys in a dark alley.
Not even a well-lit one. Ah, and now the first fight is shortly to begin. Franklin Dangerous Roosevelt is entering the cage, again in his wheelchair. Does he really think Attila will fall for the same trick as Macho Mussolini did, where he stood up to the shock of everyone watching and beat him unconscious with a wheelchair?
Possibly it will work. Attila has the huge size advantage, but he isn't known for his ability to spot the disabled man faking.
The referee is in position to start. The fighters lock eyes across the cage. No one is blinking. FDR's eyes have started to water quite badly. The bell rings, and Attila strolls to the center. FDR nudges forward in his chair, and predictably he stands. The part of the crowd who wasn't here last week are shocked. Attila, however, is unfazed. He grabs FDR's chair and... Oh my goodness! He is making FDR eat his own chair! That is going to void the warranty! FDR is helpless as he consumes 40 pounds of metal and rubber! The ref mercifully calls it. Attila is in the final. Can anyone stop this man?
Well, Pol Pot has always punched above his weight. He may have the tools to win.
No, he won't. They have stopped letting him take tools into the cage.
Ah, no fun.
Yes, that definitely changed the complexity of the sport. Stephen Stabby Harper never recovered from the weapons ban.
Bah! A one-trick pony if I ever saw one, and I used to breed Russian one-trick ponies.
Thatcher and Pot are in the ring. Thatcher is sporting her usual shaved head. Pot is in his usual blue hot pants.
I love his style. He doesn't care what the haters say.
He is a polarizing guy. You either love him or you think he's a war criminal. There is no in-between. Both fighters move to the middle. They circle. They exchange punches, both eating clean shots. They do it again. No one seems to be blocking. Thatcher is knocked down. Pot doesn't move forward. He goes to the edge of the cage and starts climbing the fence. Thatcher is dazed still. She climbs to her feet. Oh! Pot kicks Thatcher two-footed in the face and her tooth goes soaring into the rafters. She crumples once again. She stands. Pot, for the first time, seems to be agitated. He can't believe it. Thatcher puts her hand in her mouth and pulls out another tooth. She's now just a grinning at Pot. She raises her hands, urging the crowd to cheer. The crowd are loving this. She runs at him. She dives for the flying heel hook. They go down. She has it in deep. Pot is gonna tap. Wait, he's not tapping. He is flipping her the bird. Oh my goodness, she's broken his ankle and won the fight. I think I'm gonna be sick. Pot saw his toes pointing at his backside and has a turned green. Thatcher is in the final. What a momentous day for women's sport!
I'm completely stunned. This has changed my entire perspective on feminism.
Really?
If a woman could do that, she could do anything.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Stan. I will be back for the live final in 15 minutes alongside cage-fighting ace Sugar Abe Lincoln as Margaret the Iron Lady Thatcher tries to take on the undefeated murder machine Attila the Hun for the title of Ultimate Leader!
Thank you, Juan and Joe. Stay tuned for full coverage of the final later in our broadcast. Our next piece is a recent interview between Canadian Prime Ministerial fringe candidate Neil Sathersby and political correspondent Claire Noland.
Good evening, and welcome to Politics This Second. I'm Claire Noland, and today I am joined by the leader of the Democratic Independent Conservative Socialists, Neil Sathersby.
Good afternoon, Claire.
Let me begin by saying that is quite the party name.
Well, we want to have a large base of support, so we got a word for everyone.
So you think your platform reflects a broad spectrum of the voters' values?
Absolutely. We have devised a brand new political ideology we have coined Littleism.
Littleism.
Exactly. It's about having a platform of change that will affect those people at the ground level. We are proposing little changes that will improve everyday life for the vast majority of society. real change.
What changes do you propose?
Well, here are our 8 key proposals. Firstly, showering will be compulsory. Failure to comply will result in being pushed into the nearest pond. Secondly, people caught urinating on toilet seats will be made to clean them with their tongue. Thirdly, people playing music through their phone speakers on a bus will be sent to the Yukon. Fourthly, and this is for the female voters, men who are found guilty of not getting the message will have their fingers slammed in a car door. Fifth, to prevent country music, music school entry will require IQ tests.
Hang on, Neil. This is starting to just sound like a list of vicious punishments for people who commit your pet peeves.
Well, yes. That's what laws are. They make people's pet peeves illegal. For example, a big pet peeve of mine is being murdered. That really irritates me. Being robbed, that also grinds my gears. Laws are nothing more than mutual dislikes we've agreed to punish people for.
Okay, fine, but your punishments are absurd.
Really? More absurd than incarcerating people for draconian sentences? In Canada, you can spend up to 7 years in jail for possession of cocaine. Just possession. 7 years? That's as long as high school and college. No job or girlfriend will be waiting for you on the other side. Trust me. So as I was saying, sixth, every time a political party runs a negative ad campaign, they must tweet that they are petty children. Seventh, to finish the debate on immigration. All Canadians will have to go through the same screening process that all new Canadians had to get permanent residency in Canada. Those that don't pass will be kicked out. Eighth and lastly, marijuana will be legalized and taxed to pay for higher education and to fund all the great movie ideas we will have.
Mr. Southersby, what do you say to critics voicing the suggestion that your party is just one man in a basement?
Firstly, it's more of a carriage house. And secondly, size doesn't matter in ideology. Ideas matter.
But everyone is saying your ideas are nonsense. We can't go around pushing smelly old people in ponds.
Well, then, we could just do like a sheep dip thing?
Well, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you, Neil Southersby, for joining me. If you would like to join the Democratic Independent Conservative Socialists, go to www.dics.com. That's dicks.com.
Great to see some fresh ideas there from the plucky Neil Southersby. That piece was brought to you in part by Mary's Home Cooking Diner. Simple food for simple people. Next up tonight is a period piece about the struggles of Leonardo da Vinci.
Hello, Leonardo. Please take a seat.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in for this meeting. These are the other board members.
Mm.
We just wanted to see how our investment is getting on.
Your investment?
The quite a lot of money we gave you to invent products for our corporation, remember?
Of course, of course. I have a great news. I have lots of superb inventions for you to flog.
Fantastic. Do tell.
Well, firstly, I have made this flying machine called the helicopter. You simply pedal here and control here, and you can fly to Paris.
Wouldn't you be exhausted after pedaling to Paris? What about lightning? Where would you put the kids in the shopping? It's crap. Next!
I have drawn the most accurate picture of a man ever made. I call it the Vitruvian Man.
Well, for starters, why does he have 4 legs? Not that accurate, is it? Secondly, who cares? I see men every day. They are half the human race. Draw me something I haven't seen. Next!
I have this underwater breathing suit. You can use it to stay underwater a long time. I call it a scuba suit.
Have you been in the canal lately? It's full of raw sewage. Who wants to see that? Leonardo, we are losing patience. Give us something we can use.
How about the giant crossbow?
A what?
It's like a normal crossbow, but a massive. It is a psychological warfare, just like your mama's use.
That is brilliant. That is going straight into production. Any more?
I've got a lightweight triple-barrel cannon.
Leo, you've done it again. This is where you need to be concentrating your energy. Forget the arty-farty crap. We want more of this, Leo.
Thank you, sir. I will be back with more killing machines right away.
Good lad. You see, with the right mentoring, you can do amazing things.
A drawing of a man. You crazy kid.
Geniuses are never appreciated in their time. Look at Socrates, Alan Turing, L. Ron Hubbard. Next up is a debate that took place in Houston, Texas, on the issue of sport hunting. Is it cruel or just a bit of fun?
Good evening, and welcome to the Deliberation Room. I'm Olivia Dean, and tonight we are discussing the issue of sport hunting. Is it a pleasant pastime, or is the maiming of animals for sport the behavior of a psychopath? Joining me tonight to talk about this is game hunting expert Larry Dale, fox hunting enthusiast Lord Stilton of Cheshire, England, Green Party candidate Nellie Clearwater, and a half-dead badger. Welcome to you all.
Hello. Hey.
Larry, you can start, as you're currently pointing a gun at me threateningly.
Thank you, Olivia. I do find I get my own way with Bessie in my hands.
You call your gun Bessie?
Yep. Named her after my second daughter, who also happens to be my third wife.
So what's your argument for hunting?
I'm a simple man. My argument likewise is so. There ain't nothing more natural than a man killing his dinner. Why should that change?
Well, Larry, we had this thing called industrialization, and now you can just go to the supermarket and get it.
So what? This is way more natural.
Maybe, if you killed it with your bare hands, but there's nothing natural about a shotgun.
It's made of stuff that comes out of the earth. It's made of nature.
I guess, but then everything man-made is natural.
Well, yeah, dummy.
Lord Stilton, you seem to want to say something?
About time. Sorry. Larry, is it?
Yeah.
How quaint. Well, Larry here is quite right. I'm a man of tradition, a member of the upper classes who have ruled Europe long enough that nobody finds it weird. And part of that great tradition is fox hunting. They have tried to ban it, of course, in the UK, but when you own as much land as me, it's easy enough to hide. Fox hunting is a sport of kings, right up there with polo, water polo, and pleb polo. That's where you use a local ruffian as the ball. In fox hunting, it isn't even that common we catch the fox.
But when you do, they get torn to shreds by a pack of dogs.
Well, it's not like I'm going to get my hands dirty. I wasn't born with the name Larry.
Hey.
Sorry, I forgot you had the gun. Calm down, big fella.
Well, we still haven't heard from Mr. Badger. What's your two cents? A point well made. How do you counter, Lord Stilton?
Well, he's quite right. I never really thought about it like that, to be honest.
Too far, Mr. Badger. That was just racist.
Apology accepted. It was the heat of the moment.
Miss Clearwater, can you add to Mr. Badger's points?
I will try, but he hit it right on the head. To add to his points, I'd say it's a barbaric and unnecessarily cruel way to kill animals, even if it's for sustenance. In the USA, where we still have capital punishment, death row inmates are granted the most humane way possible to kill them. Why should innocent animals suffer worse than your most sadistic members of society?
Good point. I agree. We're too damn soft on death row inmates. I think I just found myself a new cause. Thank you, Nellie.
That is not what I meant.
Excuse me?
Stop pointing that gun at me! You can't shoot me for that!
Texas has a stand-your-ground law, ma'am.
I don't think that works in this situation.
You'd be surprised.
Well, let's leave it there for today, guys. We're out of time, and Mr. Badger, I believe, is coding. Join us again in the deliberation room.
Thank you, Olivia and the team in Texas there. That item was brought to you in part by Tom's Top Toilet Paper. It's almost too good for your taint. Next up tonight is the rap sesh with Karen Morley, where she interviews self-proclaimed feminist rapper Lil P. Enjoy.
Yo.
Good Good evening, and welcome to the Rap Sesh. I'm Karen Morley, and today I'm joined by multi-platinum album-selling rapper, Little P.
What up? You're looking professional today, Karen.
Thank you, Little P. Of course, that comment was right in line with your brand new outlook on life.
100% it is. I used to be this typical misogynistic, homophobic, gangster rapper, but I have been reborn.
In what sense?
Well, since my last album, Shake It and I'll Spank It, I met this shorty who showed me the error of my ways. She was like all up in my grill about my views on women, and damn, she was right. My lyrics have supported this idea of women as second-class citizens, like they were below men. I've been acting like such a little bitch. Sorry. There are just so many insults that mean being a woman. Isn't that crazy?
No, we had noticed.
Well, that's all in the past for me now. My new album reflects a more enlightened perspective.
Eloquently put.
Thank you. I'm completely changed. I go down on girls without them even asking now.
That is sadly more impressive than it should be. So what new themes have you reflected in your latest EP?
Well, one of my tracks called Liberating Labias is all about how, like, women have all this stigma surrounding how they like to get down. Like, if she wants to get down, let her get down. But it goes both ways. Maybe my bro doesn't want to get down. He should be allowed not to get down. Sometimes a homie just wants to cuddle.
Yes, you cover that concern more than fully in the track. Homies don't have to be hoes.
For sure. Ironically, that is a great track to bang to. Another thing my shorty let me in on is that ladies don't always like being stared at in public just because they're showing some skin. That idea really inspired my track, Can't Stare, Gotta Strafe.
Oh, yes. I particularly enjoyed the lyric, If she sees your eyes, don't let them be on her thighs.
That is gangster gold for sure. For sure. Another thing I learned was how, like, ladies can do all the stuff that dudes can do, like science, politics, rolling blunts. I talked about it in the track Booty and Brains. They got mad skills, some of them. Of course, some of them can't do shit. But for every one of them, I got a bro who can barely spell his name.
I noticed you also touched upon the issue of disproportional pay.
Huh?
Your song about women getting underpaid for the same job as a man.
All right! You're talking about Where's My Lady's Cheddar? Yes, that track I'm very proud of. Plus, it got the music I sampled super cheap because some lady wrote it. Crap, I gotta fix that.
So do you think other rappers will follow suit? Is this the evolution of rap?
Nah. For one, there is already some rappers doing as I do. It's just none of you actually buy their records. You're too busy listening to this bullshit. Fembash and mainstream chum. And secondly, my ideas won't stick with people. Don't be naive. It's the same when you rap about being a G. People like to pretend that they are that gangster for half an hour while they bob their head and spit the rhymes. Then they go back to their actual reality and working in a food court and forget all about it.
Well, hopefully you can be the exception. Thank you for joining me today, Little P. And you can pick up his new album, I Just Want to Bang Empowered Women, online and at all good retailers. This was the Rap Sesh.
Thank you, Little P and Karen. I can't wait to get that classic in my collection. That interview was brought to you in part by The Police. Join us now, because soon we'll have to wear cameras and it won't be as fun. Next up tonight, we have an excerpt from the new hit play out of Seattle, Outside Crying In. Enjoy.
God damn it. Where are my keys? No, not again. Come on, you old bag answer. Call yourself a manager? We'll let you supervise a turd. Oh, Seth! Thank God you're here. I've only got to lock myself out again.
You moron. You total idiot. So how did you manage that?
What?
How did you get locked out?
By forgetting my keys.
Classic Nigel. You're such an imbecile. Didn't you ring the manager?
Yes, I tried, but it doesn't matter now. Just let me in, will you? I left my roommate with my laptop open, so as we speak, I'm coming out of the closet to Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram simultaneously. I guarantee it.
Why can't he let you in, then?
He won't hear it.
Oh, is he deaf?
No. He's currently wearing noise-canceling headphones while playing Call of Duty.
He obviously doesn't like to hear the sound of his future slipping away.
Well, no problem. I can buzz you in.
Buzz me in? But you're standing next to me. Just let me in with you.
I can't. It's the rules.
What?
Look there. It says no one is allowed to enter the building unless they are with someone who has a key or they are buzzed in.
But that's for strangers. I've lived next door to you for 5 years.
The sign doesn't mention strangers. It just says people. You're a person.
You can't be serious.
I'm deadly serious. My father was killed by someone who was let into a building.
Really?
Absolutely. He was 2 days away from graduation.
Do you mean retirement?
No, we were a young family.
That's horrible. He was just randomly murdered?
No. He owed that guy a shit ton of money.
Oh, I see. Well, come on, Seth. I'm not going to kill anyone. As long as you let me in my own goddamn building.
Easy now. I will.
Thank you.
As soon as I get upstairs.
What? Wait. Seth! Seriously, how is it out of him and me? I'm the one who loses his keys. Hurry up, Seth. Come on, you dick.
Hello?
Let me in.
Who is it?
Open the door, you irritating little shit.
Well, not if you're going to speak like that. You can forget it.
No!
Thank you, Seattle, for that fine piece. That excerpt was brought to you in part by Earl's Voyeurism Photography Studios. We take your picture, you never know. Next up tonight is the exciting conclusion of Ultimate Leader. I hand you over now to one choker and the legendary Sugar Abe Lincoln.
Good evening, and welcome back to the exciting conclusion of Ultimate Leader! Tonight, I am joined by 16 times Ultimate Leader champion, Sugar Abe Lincoln!
Thank you for having me, Juan. It is an honor to be here. I only wish I was competing once again.
Yes, a terrible shame that an injury forced your retirement from this year's competition.
Well, you can never be too careful with a detached retina. If I fought this year, I could have done permanent damage.
Was that a training injury?
No. I went out clubbing in New Jersey, and a group of women kicked the crap out of me.
What did you do to offend these ladies?
They kept asking if I thought I was better than them. Of course, I did, but I gave them no reason to think that.
Well, with you kept on the sideline by angry, shiny women, another raging female has stormed her way to the final. Margaret, the Iron Lady Thatcher, has beaten the odds and is now to face Attila the Hun.
Even with her impressive wins, she is still a 100-to-1 bet for the final. Attila is impenetrable.
So true. I tried to buy him a drink the other night, and he was having none of it.
What?
Well, have you seen those biceps? Juan likes his bears.
Ah.
That doesn't make you uncomfortable, does it, Abe?
No, we just didn't have your type in my day.
Yes, you did. They just lived a lie. Anyway, here comes our competitors now. Thatcher is draped in her typical St. George's flag, Don King at her side, and her trusted winner dog, David Cameron, leading the way.
No one has told her she can't win tonight. She looks more determined than a climate change denier.
And here is Attila entering. He appears to be carrying something.
Ah, yes. He's carrying his entire entourage on his shoulders. There's his sparring partner, Mao the Maniac Zedong, sitting on his left shoulder, and his manager, Julius the Romantic Caesar, on his right.
A nice bit of psychological warfare there as he projects his raw power there in the cage. We are ready to go. The referee is making them touch fists. Thatcher refuses, giving Attila the V sign. I do not think he knows what it means. The bell rings, and Attila charges forward. Thatcher dives to her right, narrowly avoiding Attila as he slams into the cage. Thatcher tries a high kick. Attila blocks it with his face and doesn't even wince.
This does not look good for Thatcher.
thanks a Captain Obvious. Attila uppercuts Thatcher, who goes flying across the cage. Attila storms forward. Thatcher pops up and runs up his chest, flipping him over and lands on his back. She is trying the rear naked choke. Attila pulls Thatcher up by her scalp off his back and holds her out in front of him. Thatcher throws her legs around, wrapping them right around Attila's neck. Attila starts choking at Thatcher. They are both going purple. Oh! Thatcher breaks Attila's neck with her thighs. Thatcher wins. Thatcher is the ultimate leader.
Wow. Maybe I should retire my gloves. I think I just peed a little.
Thatcher is being draped in her St. George's flag. The belt is going around her waist. She smiles a toothless grin, having lost her remaining teeth from the vicious uppercut.
She can afford some of those fancy wooden dentures I use now.
There you have it, fight fans. Another year in the books. Another champion crowned. Thank you to Sugar Abe Lincoln for joining me. Tune in next year for more Ultimate Leader!
Thank you, One and Abe, for that exciting conclusion to Ultimate Leader, possibly the greatest sporting event since the Olympics were naked. That is the end of our show. Join us next week for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, featuring the voice talents of John Greenway, Mariana Mate, Conor Nashelput, Sierra Wiley, and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
Hello. Bonjour. My name is Aaron Joseph here in Vancouver, British Columbia. In the next few days, myself as well as other colleagues from around the province will be joining in on the festivities put on by Rendez-vous de la Francophonie. In an effort to celebrate the French culture here in our backyard, we've decided to shine the spotlight on everyday Francophones living in our community.
My name is Benjamin Etienne. I'm 23 years old. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia. Born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I manage a retail showroom for a Canadian menswear firm, and I also do photography and model. To be Francophone personally is really to identify with a language and a culture. Hearing it in passing and understanding that that relates to you and that you're a part of a larger community as a whole and that you contribute to its longevity, to its future. Having traits you can pick up on, jokes you can pick up and understand that like a lot of other people can't. It's just a sense of belonging. Less than 2% of the whole province speaks French, so even in the city there aren't that many people, so we don't pick up on the latest trends, customs, and norms necessarily speaking French unless we really have a bigger connection with the outside Francophone community. So I try to make the choice to have everything in French as much as I can. If I have clients that speak French, even though they speak, I'll always speak to them in French. Anytime I'm at like an ATM or customer service and there's that prompt for Selby-Soft-Fox that I always go for it. And, you know, I try and get like news apps in French rather than in English. Just making like the little differences here and there so that it's still a part of my life. Well, it's pretty different in Haiti because not only is French the national language there too, it's also Creole. So you do get a lot of pidgin French and Creole put together. You know, the older generations would speak things very differently and the slang would be very different. At least Denis used to be a pretty big one for my sister and I. It was a character this French comedian put on. Least Denis, Bryce de Nice. The expression n'importe quoi. Like if I see somebody doing something kind of foolish or, you know, that comes to mind. My name is Benjamin Etienne, a Moi je suis francophone.
For more information on the Rendez-vous de la Francophonie project, visit us at rvf.ca.
All right, thanks very much, guys. That was the White Noise show. We're right now going on to the White Noise after show, hosted by myself, Simon Welton. You're listening to the CITR 101.9. Today, we're joined in the studio by Brad Dorian and Stephen McNeil. Say hello, lads.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
And we've also got Conor Nashelput in the studio as well. Say hello, Conor.
Hello, I'm still here.
So, we're going to talk to Brad and Stephen a bit about comedy. So, before we do that, we always like to play a little bit. So, this is actually a little bit of Brad. How many years ago was this?
This was...
2013.
Yeah, 2013.
Okay, so that's why the references might seem a little out of date, but it's still good stuff. Here we go.
How much time have I got left? I love iPhones. They've revolutionized
my life. They've revolutionized the way we communicate, but not only have they revolutionized the way we communicate, they've also revolutionized the way we shit. Not the physical process of shitting, that's still shit coming in your ass, but it's the fact that you have solid entertainment now every time you take a shit. I'll take 3-4 shits a day just to play Angry Birds Undisturbed. But it's the worst when you don't have your phone. Oh my gosh, the worst 45 minutes of your life. Just sitting there in the toilet, just reading the back of shampoo bottles and cleaning out your wallet. Should I beat off? Shouldn't I beat off? But I got my parents to get iPhones because I said, if you want to communicate with me, it has to be on my terms, which is exclusively for texting. But now I get the worst text from my mom, just like the stupidest information, like, hi Brad, it's your mom. There's a stray cat in our backyard. He's black and white. Love, Mom. And they're all like that. Hi, Brad, love, Mom. It's like she's writing to her World War II boyfriend or something.
All right, lovely, lovely. That was Brad. So, yeah, that was definitely Brad Doran. That was a good little clip there. So, yeah, Brad, tell us about how'd you get into comedy? Like, what was your inspiration? What made you want to get into comedy?
Well, really, I was just looking for kind of something to do at night. You know, I started comedy in Ottawa and then, you know, just did it. You know, did it once at like a proper club and, you know, just fell in love with it right away, and you know, so just started doing it more and more. But like, what kind of got me into it, I guess, was you know, just because there was sort of a stand-up boom happening, so stand-up comedians were getting more and more you know, attention on Twitter and, you know, all like social media and whatever, and so it kind of just made comedy a little bit more accessible. You know, I always kind of thought it was, well, it was never really accessible to me for whatever reason, you know. Yeah, and just went up and did comedy the first time and got some laughs, and that just became very addictive. So just kept doing it, sure.
And why did you decide to move to Van? Was that because of comedy?
No, it wasn't because of comedy. We were just, like, Ottawa was a great city, but, you know, it's I like grew up there, and you know, my girlfriend also grew up there, and we both just kind of wanted to get away. We were both away from Ottawa for a long time, and then we both moved back, and then both just wanted to leave again, mostly because the winters are just atrocious there. So and Vancouver was good for, you know, for work for both of us, and I'm glad I moved here for comedy, because it's an extremely good comedy scene here for sure.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. So, what do you like about this scene then? Like, what's better about it?
Well, I mean, like, the scene itself is very, you know, very friendly, like, with the comedians and stuff, right? Like, you know, Stefan was the first comedian that I met here in Vancouver, actually, when I came down and did a show at the Comedy Mix, and we became friends, you know, immediately. But that experience happened over and over and over with everyone within the scene. So it's a very close-knit scene, which is good. Plus there's like the interesting thing that I find about Vancouver versus Ottawa is what the crowd is willing to accept. Here in Vancouver, they're a little bit more sensitive, you know, with like various topics and stuff, which forces you to be innovative in your writing, which is, you know, then kind of makes you write more universal material. And you know, you hear a lot of the veterans within the scene saying that Vancouver is a good place to cut your teeth because the audiences are so like specific, right? Which really forces you to think outside, well, you know, for lack of a better term, think outside of the box when it comes to writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why I came out here, was for that exact reason. Yeah, it was either Toronto or Vancouver.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, and then people that I spoke with, too, in Toronto just said, like, I was coming in at, like, the amateur open micer level, and, you know, it takes a long time to get ahead in Toronto, and everybody said Vancouver's a smaller scene, it's a supportive scene, and it is a great place to cut your teeth because of that, like you said.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because I do think we do have that problem in Canada of the grass is greener on the other side, where this guy's this coast are constantly going, oh, Toronto's where I should be, and then vice versa. Because, I mean, there's plenty of comics I've seen go the other way as well.
I mean, there's benefits, you know, for both the East and the West. Obviously, the East has, you know, more more stages.
I think there's more work, but it's only once you get to a certain level.
Exactly. Yeah.
So until you get to that level, you might as well be in a scene where you're developing properly, or rather than just be somewhere where you're just doing open mics for 20 comics.
Yeah.
Six times a week.
It's true. It's funny because I've done a lot of comedy in the interior, sort of like working in small town. I was in Kelowna for a long time, and I kind of appreciated it there because there was less comics. At least you had that guaranteed stage time. And
there is that.
Because Vancouver, it is tough, I think, for a lot of amateurs, in that you get this sort of 5-minute window, which is really hard to really sort of, build anything with.
There's not really any, right now, there's really no, there's a couple of open mics starting, but there's not at that ground level. It's kind of difficult right now, but I mean, that happens all the time. Open mic shuts down or something shut down, and then something will start back up. But there's actually quite a few comics in Vancouver now. I mean, I've only been here for a couple of years, and I go to shows, and I don't know some of the people.
Just tons, absolutely tons.
Yeah, there is a huge boom here, and you know, that's a part of there being a lot of good independent shows, along with three clubs. So there's lots of opportunity, which is good, and when you have more of those pub type shows and open mics and stuff like that, it just makes it so much more accessible to a lot more people. And you know, a lot of people have, you know, this is something they've always wanted to do. This is I did it to, you know, as like a hobby, as something to do at night, right? And I think a lot of people do that as well. And then it turns into something, you know, a little bit more substantial, which is always good for a scene. But
So what about you, Stefan? Like, why did you get into comedy? What was it that made you want to do it?
I did some theater stuff and a little bit of improv when I was younger, in like high school or junior high, and then I stopped doing that. But I kept writing sketches with a friend of mine, and we just smoked a lot of pot and wrote sketch after sketch after sketch, and never did anything with them. But he wanted to try stand-up, so we wrote a thing for him, and then he chickened out and wouldn't do it. So I emailed the club and said, well, if you're not going to do it, I'll do it. And went up and did it. And then when I got off stage, I was just like, oh, this is what I'm going to do now.
Yeah, you had a little taste, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I almost didn't do it. I almost left. Right before they called my name, I almost left.
Fair dues. All right, well, we're going to play a song, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk more about local comedy and what's going on with Brad and Stefan. So we'll be right back with you after this.
Not that I think. This is the sound of compost and recyclables going into the garbage. Garbage that ends up in the landfill creating greenhouse gases. This is the sound of a more sustainable campus. You can make a difference when you sort it out. Learn more at sustain.ubc.ca/sortitout.
All right, guys, I'm back with Brad and Stefan. We're in the studio. So now we're going to talk about what you guys are up to in the coming few weeks. I know you guys got a couple of shows.
Yeah, we Stefan and I just started a show. Well, Stefan used to run a show at the Railway Club down on Dunsmuir. You ran that for a long time.
Yeah, I ran it for about a year, and then I left and went back east for a few months and gave the room to the other guy that we run it with, Dylan, and...
Dylan Williamson. Yeah.
And,
so
now me, Brad, and Dylan are going to start doing our own show there.
Yeah, so it'll
be in the back room of the Railway Club.
In the Mermaid Room.
Nice.
It's very intimate. It's like just this little tiny... We actually found it. We went to the Railway Club once after our show just to have a beer, and there was a punk band. And it was like $15 cover, and we just wanted to have a drink, so we asked the bartender if we could just go in the back and not pay cover, and then he told us about this pub. It was like hidden in the back. And
it's like a little snug pub there. Yeah. You know, it has its own bar and everything like that. Yeah. So
it's got this small stage.
Yeah.
Nice. And, I think I've got pretty low ceilings in there, which I always think is a good atmosphere.
Yeah, you definitely need low ceilings for comedy.
It's the kind of room that, like, at 30 people, it's perfect. And then if you put 32 people in there, it's so packed.
Yeah. Which is nice, you know.
It is nice.
Lowers it's expectations.
For yes.
Nice.
But yeah, our first show is this Monday. And we have
crazy
jam-packed lineup. Jam-packed. I don't even know how we got it. Ivan Decker is going to be there. Taz and Ryan from Sunday Service are going to come up and do some improv. And we have Erica Sigurdsson, who's also another
one of the funniest people I've ever seen.
In Canada, she's been a namesake for... almost a decade, and we also have Steve McGowan and Stuart Jones.
And also,
nice, Stuart. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. He was actually on this show last week.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we just added Simon King. Simon King is leaving the country soon, so he's going to come down and do. Yeah, so it's a crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be a nuts show. So.
That's a quality lineup.
Yeah. So that all starts at 9, but.
$5.
Yeah, and there's so many of those level shows in Vancouver right now, which is really good.
Not as good as this show. Though.
No, not as good as our show is going to be. Like, it's like everyone's going to like they're going to have to replace The Office for the 2010 Olympics there. That's on Powell and make it a mermaid comedy office. It's just going to.
Brad runs two other rooms as well on the side, and you might as well just quit those because
there's no point doing. In a minute, I won't have time to dealing with all the fan mail that we
get. This is gonna be huge.
We only we're only analog there now, so we don't.
Brad quit his job. I'm gonna quit my job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Every 2 weeks, we get 30 people in there, and then we'll split the money up and just live off that.
Yeah. And then I also help run a show, Joke in the Box, at the Press Box. That's a weekly show, and this week we have Dino Archie.
Cool.
Going to be headlining there. So.
Yeah, I saw him opening for Adam Devine. He did a really good set.
He's very good, yeah. He's quickly becoming one of the top comics. For sure.
Nice. And what was the... You said there was one other show you do regularly?
I was doing a show up in North Van at the Finch and Barley. Travis Dudfield and I were doing that for a while, but we... just because I picked up the Mermaid Show and doing Joke in the Box, we transferred that over to Brendan Burke's doing that now.
Nice.
But Finch and Barley, that's once a month on Sundays. That's a fun little bar, too.
That is a fun show.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good show. And so Brendan Burke's going to take that over and kind of keep the same concept. But,
So, I've got one more question for you guys. I always find it interesting that a lot of comics do sort of start out and then they end up sort of running their own show.
Yes.
So why is it you guys felt, interested in doing that? And what, why do you do it?
I do it just because I love producing a show.
Really?
I love putting the acts together, putting them in a certain order, setting up the room the way that I like it, the picking the music that goes on, and then it's like it's your show that you produce. It So it's like, I never get why, I don't understand, though I do appreciate it very much, because the scene needs it, like when people just go into a bar and they're just like, oh, this is a place that sells booze, we'll just put a microphone up and yeah. Now we got a show. I would never be able to produce a show like that. But again, like I said, I'm thankful that people do those because I need stage time. But yeah, and then it also helps with, it's slow getting into like the clubs and all that kind of stuff when you're, especially at the level that I guess me and Brad are at right now. And it kind of just gives you a show, like yeah. Something to look forward to every week, every yeah. month. You can get, traveling comics in, you hook some guys up from Alberta.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when yeah. you're in town there, they help you out, so it's a great way of doing that.
Yeah, like the stand-up comedy scene, it's very altruistic, to that degree where, if you run a show, then you scratch somebody's back, they scratch yours sort of thing. So it's good to run shows. It's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stresses that come with running a show.
Yeah, I mean, I know emceeing can be really bloody stressful. Yeah.
Well, but that's good too, because it gives you the opportunity to practice emceeing get comfortable with that, because that's a totally different skill than just going up and writing jokes and then regurgitating those jokes on stage.
Well, I mean, and just the time, if you're not looking careful, you end up doing like 40 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like learning how to time your sets, but it's also just learning how to read a room without having to rely on your material, I guess. So then you're sort of like, because you're supposed to, there's lots of different ways, to host a room and,
Yeah, and also you're the mascot of
exactly.
That night. Like, you're there to make them feel it's mm-hmm. not. You're not supposed to be the center of attention. You're there to make the audience feel comfortable and make them okay with this weird experience that they're about to have, where they just gave somebody money mm-hmm. to listen to somebody talk on stage, and you're there to just be like, this is gonna be great.
That's all you're meant to do, is just keep the show rolling.
And if you can slide some of your own material and get do your own stuff, and that's fun too, but your main job is just to make that audience be like, okay, this isn't weird, and this is gonna be lovely.
Well, and especially when you're just doing a pub show and people are there on a Tinder date or something, right? And not thinking there's gonna be five guys with beards, talking about cats on stage. there's going to be, you sort of have to slowly break them into it, especially when hockey's on. Ooh, that's rough.
Having
to turn off the TVs.
No, I definitely think there's something to be said for cover fees, and at least it gives you that psychology of, I paid to come in here and watch something now. Yeah. So.
There's a lot of different ways to get somebody invested in a show. Obviously, cover fees is the best, but I would say just having a supportive bar.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a bar show, the bar's got to be supportive of it. And you see the rooms that are doing well, it's because the bars, care about it as well. And the bars are helping get an audience. So.
Yeah, when you go in to do a show and you ask the bartender how the shows have been, you just go in and you're making small talk and you ask them how the shows have been, and they're like, I don't know, I have no idea. This is probably going to be horrible. If the staff is just I don't even pay attention to what's going on.
No, it's true.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, are you new? No, I'm here every Wednesday. I just don't care.
Oh dear. All right, well, on that note, I think we'll let it go. We're gonna play a couple more songs, but then we're out of here. We will be back next week with more White Noise, so definitely join us again for the after show. Remember, if you have any questions for the show, for anyone on our show, it's whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. I'd really like to thank Brad and Stefan for being with us this week. Thank you very much, lads.
Thank you,
and Connor as well for joining us. That was lovely. He's our great mascot in the studio. But we'll be back next week, so stay tuned. We've got another show coming up right after us, which is I can't remember now, but it's pretty good. You should join. See you guys later.
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. You remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What's this Pilate? He fiddled well.
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sunday.
Well, find a good church.
I don't know why you are standing up for school. And now you're knocking on Logan's door. I don't know how you are confused and less than cool. And I've got nothing left to tell you. I don't know what it is you think you're clinging to. Right now you're holding on to nothing. I don't know who it is you think you're talking to. Because there's no one left to hear you. I've left you up and away, you're back across the floor. And watch you turn around. I've left you up and away, you're back across the floor. And watch you turn around. How long before you learn you got a bigger price? Right now you're coming up with zero. How long before you try to pull the stock from life? Because there's nothing left but hiding. I've left you up and away, you're back across the floor. And watch you turn around.
Thank you.